This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. And here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We're doing whatever we can to make sure that we break the infectious circle. And one of them is to bring the public awareness, because it's the root of infection to being water and food.
That's Enoch Fayle, Deputy Minister of Health in Malawi, on the polio outbreak there, the first in 6 years in Africa. Details coming up. Also, an award-winning Ugandan journalist tortured in jail has fled to Germany. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. UN Secretary General's Special Advisor in Libya, Stephanie Williams, renewed her calls for all actors to stay focused on the electoral process in line with public demand. She called on them to preserve the current calm on the ground and pursue the broadest possible consensus through an inclusive and transparent process. In part two of his exclusive interview for VOA, global analyst Ahmed Fati discussed with the UN special advisor the response to her calls and the role of the international community in helping Libya stabilize.
After the High National Elections Commission declared force majeure on the presidential elections in Libya in late December, we have a process where the ball was returned to the House of Representatives. They formed a roadmap committee that started to chart the way forward, and then they began to cooperate with a roadmap committee that was established through the High State Council. And they really started to work together in a consultative and consensual way, and that was what produced the vote on the 12th constitutional amendment, and then the subsequent vote on the same day for the selection of a prime minister designate. Consensus, consultation, transparency are the keys here moving forward. And I think that's what Libyans expect of their elected leaders. And they, above all, expect them to respect timelines, to move smartly forward towards the electoral process. This has been 11 years, essentially an extended transitional period. Libyans want elections. We recognize that elections should be part of the solution and not part of the problem in Libya, which was why many in December and in January were calling for a firm constitutional basis and credible electoral laws in order for the elections to proceed. So this constitutional amendment has in some way laid out a time frame that could be around 14 months. It's up to the Libyan leaders and their elected representatives to respect that timeline and to move smartly and efficiently on the way forward.
You have been engaging with the full range of actors across the Libyan political spectrum, such as the High State Council, House of Representatives, to finally reach a consensus on a way forward. How optimistic are you regarding reaching such a credible timeline?
I'm realistic. You know, now spent 4 years in Libya, but I must say the Libyan political agreement was signed in December of 2015. So we're a little more than 6 years into the implementation of this agreement. And what I've seen really for the first time, certainly in my extended tenure in the country, is that you have a great deal of consensus now. I mean, it's good to see that, because I would say that the relationship between the two chambers has been marked more by division than by consultation in these last 6+ years. So I guess it's better late than never, but they really need to respect the will of the 2.8 million Libyans who registered to vote and who want to see elections take place so that we can, on a firm constitutional basis, whether that's a permanent constitution or a constitutional basis that is arrived consensually between the two chambers, that puts the country on a firm and permanent footing, allows for, you know, the establishment of, let's say, like a 4-year government that can work on all of the problems and issues that have beset this poor poor country since the upheaval in 2011.
What role do you envision for the international community in helping Libya to stabilize and achieve the withdrawal of foreign mercenaries and other forces?
Everything that's happening now is happening really under the broad umbrella of the Berlin process, which provides an international umbrella for Libyans themselves to engage. You know, the first couple of sentences of the Berlin conclusions from January 19th, 2020 say that the international community respects the Libyan-led and the Libyan-owned process. It was Libyans themselves, the Joint Military Commission that came together, drafted and signed the ceasefire agreement of October 2020. It was Libyans themselves who requested that the foreign mercenaries and foreign forces depart. Now, that has not turned into an overnight operation. It's complicated. There are bilateral arrangements between Libya and the countries from which these mercenaries came from that are being worked out. 5+5 has visited some capitals. The process is moving. Is it moving as fast as some people would like? No, but it's moving and there's serious engagement and there is support from this broad array of countries that are now participants in the Berlin process and who continue to engage with the Libyans in all of these tracks, military, security, economic, political, human rights, international humanitarian law, and the very important issue of transitional justice and national reconciliation in Libya to help support the Libyans as they start to themselves move their own country forward.
That was Stephanie Williams, the UN Secretary General's Special Advisor in Libya, speaking with global analyst Ahmed Fatih. Malawi and UN agencies have launched an emergency response to the country's polio outbreak, the first in Africa in 5 years. The plan includes mass immunization of children under 5 years of age and intensive surveillance to prevent the virus from spreading further. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The move comes a few days after the country declared a national health emergency after a three-year-old child was paralyzed by the virus, which is the same strain found in Pakistan. Enoki Pale is Deputy Minister of Health in Malawi. He told a press conference in the capital, Lilongwe, Tuesday that despite the fact that the strain is imported, there is need for a swift action against its spread.
We're doing whatever we can to make sure that we break the infectious circle. And one of them is to bring the public awareness, because its route of infection are two, being water and food. The disease is a disease global concern and affect everybody, including even our neighbors.
Malawi last reported a polio case in 1992. The country was declared polio-free in 2005, 15 years before the African continent was declared polio-free. The emergency response plan includes a rollout of mass vaccination campaign for all children under 5 years of age and disease surveillance across the country. Dr. Janet Gaita is country representative for WHO in Malawi.
But the specific outbreak response is a national immunization campaign targeting all children aged under 5 with the polio vaccine, which is 2 oral drops, and it will be repeated again in a second round. But what is really, really key is that every under 5, wherever they are reached. So that includes in the districts worst affected by Tropical Storm Anna.
So far, a team of experts and rapid response teams from a non-profit, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, have arrived in Malawi. The organization, based at the WHO regional office in Africa, says it aims to support coordination, case tracking, data management, communications, and operations. The Ministry of Health says other partner organizations, such as UNICEF, USA CDC and Africa CDC have also started sending teams to support emergency operations and innovative vaccination campaign solutions. Like many other countries in the world, Malawi provides a polio vaccine that targets type 1 and type 3 of the polio virus, following the eradication of polio virus type 2 many years back. However, WHO says research into the new case in Malawi has shown that the three-year-old child has type 1 and that the child was not fully vaccinated against the disease. No reason is given for failure to complete the polio vaccine, but some health experts cite pandemic-related preventive measures such as social distancing as factors adding to the challenge in getting children vaccinated. Malawi's community health ambassador, Maziko Matemba, suggests the need to empower community healthcare workers with the skill to identify polio cases.
The community system structure needs to be operating, because maybe you can observe our community health workers, if not, maybe they're not well supported, maybe they were not able to identify that we have a problem of an unvaccinated individual in the community, which I think has got this.
According to the Ministry of Health, authorities are now working to finalize the budget for all activities to be submitted to the Global Polio Eradication Initiative and other partners for funding the implementation of the emergency response plan, expected to start in 4 or 6 weeks' time. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
An award-winning Ugandan author who fled the country after being charged with insulting President Yoweri Museveni and his son told the French news agency AFP today that he was relieved to be in Germany for medical treatment after being tortured in jail. Kakuwanza Rokira Basaija was arrested by security forces in Kampala last December and charged with offensive communication. Kakuwanza slipped out of Uganda 2 weeks ago after a court denied his application to have his passport returned ahead of a criminal trial that was due to start today. His case raised international concern, with the European Union and the United States calling for his release. According to his lawyer, Aaron Kiza, the UN Refugee Agency facilitated his journey to Germany. Police in South Africa have scored a major victory against a notorious gang of armed robbers after enduring days of criticism for their inability to stem the crime currently overwhelming the country. The release last week of statistics which showed dramatic rises in all violent crimes in South Africa resulted in analysts, opposition parties, and citizens slamming the police for inefficiency. The numbers show a 40% rise in cash-in-transit heists, when heavily armed robbers attack vehicles transporting money to and from banks and other institutions. Darren Taylor has more.
Gauteng Province Police Commissioner General Elias Mawela says a specialized unit received information that the gang was going to attack a cash-in-transit vehicle in the south of Johannesburg on Monday.
There was a money truck which they were observing they were going to hit it. But because of we had a very good intelligence, our members, they decided that, you know what, we'll rather prevent them from committing that crime.
Police Minister Becky Cele spoke to reporters at the scene.
In our operation, there was a helicopter, and they shot the helicopter. They shot the helicopter before anybody did anything to them. They injured a pilot. There are police that are in hospital as we speak. We hope that they are not serious.
He said the police cornered some of the gang's stolen luxury high-speed sedans in the suburb of Rosettenville, and a shootout ensued.
These guys are about 25 of them. 8 of them are dead, and 8 are arrested.
Trele said the deceased and arrested men are mostly Zimbabweans, with 4 being from South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province.
They were armed. They all have mostly AKs, about 6 or 7 AKs here. We are working with heartless people that are prepared to kill. I asked the one from...
A crime intelligence officer told VOA there were at least 2 R4 assault rifles found at the scene, as well as military-grade explosives that the criminals were going to use to blow open the armored money truck. The R4 is a weapon used exclusively by the South African National Defense Force. This, said the officer, indicates that some of the gang members are, or were, SANDF soldiers, or that the criminals received training and weaponry from elements within the army. David Tembe, in charge of safety and security for the Johannesburg municipality, agrees.
Those people appear to have been militarily trained. You can't get somebody who can shoot someone right at the helicopter with such precision unless that particular person has been trained militarily.
He adds that criminals in South Africa seem to get their hands on firearms very easily.
The police station gets robbed by these criminals. These are the firepower that they are using.
Cash in transit robbers in particular are usually armed with powerful automatic weapons. They get AK-47s from KwaZulu-Natal, a province that remains awash with the Russian-made rifles used in political strife there in the 1980s and early 1990s. Security experts have been saying for years that good intelligence is the primary way to reduce high crime in a country with an average of 60 murders a day. Trele says his officer's success in foiling the heist shows what can be achieved if intelligence structures are strong.
Police intelligence here did a good job. This is an intelligence-driven operation, and we are going to keep on pumping up our operations until we win this war.
But South Africans have seen other police successes in the past, only for them to fade into distant memory as crime has continued to intensify. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Cameroon's women and children have suffered disproportionately in the country's five-year separatist conflict. But a report by the International Crisis Group says the role of women has expanded from just being victims to being rebels and peacemakers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports on the recent Crisis Group report from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's Anglophone separatist conflict in the country's western regions has severely impacted women and put them at greater risk of violence. Brussels-based think tank the International Crisis Group, the ICG, in a report released Wednesday, says women have suffered more than the region's men since armed conflict broke out in 2017. Are Elvis Ntui is the ICG's senior consulting analyst for Cameroon.
Some of the violence women have suffered include kidnapping, rape, torture and execution. The conflict has destroyed critical medical infrastructure, thereby depriving women of access to health. It has further exposed them to other ills like trafficking and sexual exploitation. The authorities should prosecute those who are responsible for crimes and include women in a peace process. But separatists must also ensure an effective end to the school sabotage and stop the practice of requiring women to serve them in their camps.
Cameroon's separatist groups deny abusing women and say that some women have joined their forces freely. Capo Daniel is deputy defense chief of the Ambazonia Defense Forces, ADF, one of the biggest rebel groups in Cameroon.
It is unfortunate that the crisis group will target the Ambazonian forces for something that is not well substantiated. There have been no circumstances where women have been seen in our camps against their will. There are members within our forces who are women, who are volunteer.
Rights activists accuse government troops of abusing women too, though officials deny it. Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua is Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family. She says Cameroon is working with female peace campaigners in initiatives to end the conflict.
The Ministry of Women's Empowerment and the Family, along with women leaders, stepped up to express their indignation on the murder of their sisters and children by secessionists in the northwest and southwest regions. The government has made the promotion of the human rights of all citizens a major concern.
More than 1,000 Cameroonian women converged in Yaoundé last August for a first ever peace convention to try to end the conflict. They asked rebels and government troops to lay down their guns so peace could return to the restive regions, but fighting has continued. Violence erupted in Cameroon's western regions in 2017 after English-speaking teachers and lawyers protested against discrimination by the country's French-speaking majority. The military responded with a crackdown and separatists took up arms. The United Nations says about 3,500 people have been killed and at least 700,000 displaced, with women and children the most affected. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Madagascar has been hit by the second cyclone this month, still reeling from the impact of one storm. Cyclone Imanti lashed the island nation overnight. The French news agency AFP says no casualties have been reported yet. The cyclone is forecast to exit Madagascar tonight, but authorities are warning of torrential rains, heavy gusts, and widespread flooding. Madagascar is prone to numerous storms and cyclones between November and April every year. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey! Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports.